Today's head-scratching economic indicator goes like this. It's entirely possible, when all the counting is done, that the European economy in the first quarter will have grown faster than our own. Tell me you saw that coming. From American Public Media, this is Market Class. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday, the 29th of April. Glad to have you along for the ride, everybody. It's going to be a couple of weeks before we get actual numbers for European gross domestic product, but I got to tell you, even with the prospect of Greece teetering on the edge of leaving or, who knows, getting thrown out of the Eurozone, this morning we set a fairly low bar for them to beat. U.S. GDP, that is a key, although not infallible, measure of economic growth, barely moved the needle in the first quarter, up just 0.2%. Marketplace's Nova Sappho gets us going with what gives with that.
What's the single most important thing dragging on the GDP?
You know, normally I would struggle with that type of question.
But not today, says Guy Labat of Janney Montgomery Scott.
Spending on mining, exploration, and wells, a.k.a. energy, is down 48.7%. That is a big number.
Oil prices are down, and so is investment in that sector. He says a number of other variables played a part, like a West Coast port slowdown, which hurt exports. But hang on, there's another big culprit, says Jim O'Sullivan of High Frequency Economics.
I mean, obviously the weather is on the list.
Yes, weather. My marketplace colleagues in Los Angeles might understandably not have felt it, but for much of the rest of the country, this winter, like last, was kind of a bummer. So consumer spending wasn't great. But winter happens every year. Don't we account for that?
Government statisticians actually seasonally adjust the data.
Justin Wolfers of the Peterson Institute for International Economics looked back at that adjustment over the last 30 years, and he found a pattern.
The estimate of GDP growth in the first quarter has consistently been lower than in all the other quarters.
Because, he says, we haven't significantly changed the seasonal adjustment algorithm in decades. But that hasn't affected yearly GDP numbers.
The yearly numbers have been remarkably consistent. They've suggested this is an economy that keeps growing.
Jim O'Sullivan says he is taking the Q1 numbers with a grain of salt. In fact, he's watching jobless claims for context.
I mean, over time, if there's a significant slowing in the trend in GDP, invariably you see an uptrend in claims.
And so far, he says, that hasn't happened. In Chicago, I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
In Baltimore today, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan called last night and its relative calm a turning point. Businesses and people working to get back to normal. Just in time, too, because Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genza reminds us that tourism and convention season is upon us, and Baltimore has just kicked off a big ad campaign.
Baltimore had just launched its new ad campaign April 2nd, featuring celebrities like Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr.
Baltimore knocks it out of the park every time.
Only about 3 weeks later, this was the soundtrack to the city. Now, Visit Baltimore, which handles the city's tourism and convention marketing, is pulling the new ad campaign. Visit Baltimore CEO Tom Noonan says they're working on a different message, reassuring tourists they'll be safe.
And the second thing we want is to make sure that they understand that the city's in great shape.
But that could be a hard sell. Two conventions scheduled for this week in Baltimore were canceled, and the city's 10 p.m. curfew is scheduled to stretch into next week. Restaurants and bars have already taken a hit, and things will get worse this weekend. Bernard Lyons is bar manager at Bertha's in Baltimore's touristy Fells Point neighborhood.
Especially, you know, for the waiters and waitresses and bar staff who rely on tips. That's like having probably two-thirds of your income just reduced overnight.
And the economic damage from a riot can last a long time, just as Los Angeles. Of course, its 1992 riots dragged on, and Baltimore's only lasted about a day. Rob Boddy teaches economics at Lake Forest College. He estimates L.A.'s riots cost the city almost $4 billion. And Boddy says help doesn't pour into a riot-torn city.
It's almost as if people are saying, you fouled your nest, you fix it.
But Baltimore residents are helping themselves, marching out with brooms to sweep up glass from shattered storefronts and holding peaceful demonstrations. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, things were, quite honestly, better than you might have thought. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There was a big developers conference up in San Francisco today. Lots of people talking about cool things in the offing for the company in question. The company in question, amazingly enough, being Microsoft. The words cool things and Microsoft aren't often found in the same sentence, I know, but this time apparently was different. CEO Satya Nadella was there singing the praises of the new Windows operating system and some other cool stuff the company's working on. Our tech correspondent Molly Wood was there as well. Hey, Molly.
Hey, Kai. How are you?
I'm all right. Listen, help me understand the Microsoft Developers Conference, because Apple, it's not, right?
It definitely seems like it would be the least interesting
yes.
tech event of possibly the entire year. But Microsoft is having a little bit of a prom king moment. This actual developer conference sold out 45
wow.
minutes after tickets went on sale. And there's a lot of buzz around the new CEO, around some of the plans for Windows, and of course, around their big holographic headset.
Well, all right. So let's take those in order for, I want to take actually Satya Nadella first. He's kind of breaking through a little bit here. Is that fair to say?
I think he really is. You know, Microsoft for a long time has had this problem where it was very divided. There was competition between divisions, even within the company, and nobody knew what anybody was working on. So even though they've been promising a unified Windows experience yeah. for at least a decade, it seems like Satya Nadella is actually breaking down the walls. He might be the guy to make it happen.
All right. What about Windows? What is it? 10 now, I guess?
It is Windows 10,
yeah.
not Windows 9. The last version was actually Windows 8.
Okay. That's a whole nomenclature thing that the geeks are going to get. I don't know.
We're speculating that they're just trying to put some distance between Windows
yeah.
8 and the next version, because Windows 8 was a bomb.
Yeah.
Windows 10 is going to be the operating system that will work across all devices, they say, not just your computer or your laptop, but also on your phone, also on your tablet, a real unified experience that will even include the Xbox.
For all those Windows phones that all of us bought, what? Hello?
Exactly. No, and then they'll start selling Windows phones. That's definitely going to
yeah.
happen once Windows 10 comes out.
Today in Tech Fantasies with Molly Wood. all right. Talk to me for a second about this headset thing. What is that?
Yeah, the HoloLens is Microsoft's sort of new cool attempt to be future sexy. And it is a wearable headset. So holographic headsets or augmented reality headsets
yeah.
are almost like the next step after virtual reality, because they project images onto the real world. So they gave a really pretty cool demo today of a possible medical student who can see virtual cadavers, virtual human bodies, and really actually get all the way inside and look at a beating heart. And
Ooh.
Because you can project a hologram anywhere, it actually has a lot of potential for work environments and for education and for medicine.
Huh. I wonder if it's worth, just to wrap up here, to remind folks that Microsoft, for all the grief that I've been given at the last 3 minutes, is still a ginormous company with bajillions of dollars in the bank.
It is. We should all be failing, like the rumors of Microsoft failing. It's worth $400 billion. They make over $93 billion a year. And most of that actually is on those cloud services
yeah.
that Amazon just announced it makes so much money on. So even if Windows 10 and Windows Phone doesn't totally take off, they're still going to be okay.
Windows 10 coming soon to a laptop near you. Molly Wood, our tech correspondent on the Microsoft Developers Conference. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks for having me.
According to the American Association of Orthopedic Surgeons, in the year 2012, which is the latest data they've got, more than 320,000 people in this country had hip replacement surgery. The cost, as with many things medical, can be unpredictable. But Gigi Duban reports from Birmingham, Alabama, that doctors and insurers are trying to find a way to keep a lid on things.
On a recent Thursday, Darlene Oglesby came in for her postoperative follow-up using a walker, but not really using it. The physician's assistant at Andrews Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Center in Birmingham does a quick check on her.
Now, I watched you walking, and you do not need that, sister.
Thank you.
No. So what we usually do is let you slowly progress to a cane and eventually to nothing. We
have 2 weeks ago, Oglesby had a total hip replacement. And to realize how big a deal it is that she's walking so easily, you have to know how things were before the surgery. Sitting for a long time hurt. Getting out of bed hurt. Walking hurt.
And then it progressively got worse to where I could not walk upstairs without being in tears. And we tried therapy, we tried injections, didn't work.
Oglesby's doctor told her she had arthritis and that she needed a hip replacement.
That was it. I was ready. I was ready.
Oglesby is 50, which might seem young to have a hip replaced, but it's not anymore. Since the year 2000, according to the CDC, hip replacements among people aged 45 to 54 more than tripled. That's the biggest percentage change of any age group. Randeep Kalan is an orthopedic surgeon, and he's with the Arthritis Foundation. He says a lot of people over 65 expect to have aches and pains.
But in your 40s and 50s, you know, you're still considered a contributor to the workforce, and that kind of pain is something people are not ready to live with or don't want to live with.
Plus, people this age are more active than they used to be. They run marathons. They do yoga. So Kalan says a lot of them say, why wait? But there's also this. Younger, healthier patients who have replacements stay in the hospital fewer days, and they recover faster than older patients. That's a big perk for hospitals and insurance companies trying to keep costs down. Another way to cap costs? Bundled payments.
Where the insurer will pay the hospital or will pay an entity, an organization, if you will, a flat fee.
Nationally, procedure costs range from a low of about $11,000 to as high as more than $125,000, according to a 2013 study. A flat fee includes everything, from the implant device to post-op care. It's all negotiated up front, so there are no surprises. Walmart and Lowe's brokered deals like this with four hospitals across the U.S. Employees of those companies who choose one of these centers don't pay anything out of pocket, even travel costs. A spokesman for Lowe's told me it ensures better outcomes, and their employees get back to work faster. That saves the company money.
Joint replacements are the first and most aggressively marketed orthopedic procedures for bundle payments.
And if taking a trip to Missouri or Seattle to have a hip replaced isn't your idea of fun, try Costa Rica. Lisa Warren is CEO at Andrews Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Center, where Darlene Oglesby had her hip replaced. She says her practice is looking into sending patients overseas. Warren says it's a lot cheaper.
Probably less than half of what it would cost in the United States. I mean, we've looked at some facilities, for example, Costa Rica, and they can do the total hip with the physician component, with 2 weeks stay, with the rehab for about $18,000.
That includes travel and recuperating in a very nice place, Warren says. She says it might make sense to people who maybe couldn't afford a hip replacement here. Still, copays and deductibles are going up, and Warren wonders whether that'll cut into the volume of hip replacements at her busy practice. Could be, she says, more people will decide, hey, maybe it can wait. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I was there working on the Pekin Times at the time of the invasion of Normandy.
Our series on first jobs, including one from a long time ago. But first, let's do the numbers. Yeah, there you go. The Dow Industrial's off 0.4% today, 74 points, closed at 18,035, did the blue chips. The NASDAQ gave back 0.6%, 31 points, 5,023. The S&P 500 dropped a third of 1%. That's about 7 points. Ended things at 2106. Financial firms found the upside. Bank of America jumped 2%. JP Morgan Chase moved up 1.33%. Anything but a sell job for Salesforce.com today. Reports that the maker of customer service software may be taken over pushed its shares up more than 11% to an all-time high. Yelp up 0.1% before the bell. And then the consumer review website reported disappointing earnings. And as these things go, shares fell more than 7% in after-hours trading. Twitter continued its free fall after yesterday's plunge. Lost another 9%. Bond prices off as well. The yield on the 10-year T-note up to 2.0%. You're listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on personal income and spending for March. A House subcommittee on higher education and workforce training holds a hearing on improving college access and completion for low-income and first-generation students. And it's nicknamed the Pelican State, and the magnolia is its state flower. Louisiana joined the Union on April 30th, 1812. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You pay for something, you want to know what you're getting for your money. Yes, pretty much a basic tenet of capitalism. Today, the Securities and Exchange Commission, as required by the Dodd-Frank reform law of 5 long years ago, proposed some new rules that would apply that idea to the touchy issue of CEO pay versus corporate performance. Think big bank CEOs making millions while their companies almost made the economy go bust. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson has the story.
So publicly traded companies already have to disclose what their top executives make.
When I read the announcement this morning, I thought to myself,
Peter Crist is the chairman of Crist Colder Associates, a headhunter for executives. He says investors can usually work out how a CEO's pay relates to a company's performance from information it already sends to shareholders.
The key is how you disclose and in what form.
The SEC wants all publicly traded companies to present this information in the same way, so investors don't have to work for it. It's just there. Easy, right? Well, not to get all philosophical on you, but...
Well, what does pay really mean?
Stanford professor David Larker says the first complicated piece of this is how and when CEOs are paid, often with stock options that stretch over years.
So the expected value or best guess might be $1 million. But, you know, 3-5 years from now, it may be zero, it may be $5 million.
And how you measure a company's performance is also tricky, says Nora McCord. She's with Stephen Hall and Partners, which does consulting on executive compensation.
Think about whether or not the sum total of your intelligence is encapsulated in your SAT score. Of course, many components that speak to that are incorporated in that test, but it may not be entirely reflective.
Similarly, she says metrics like a company's stock price and dividends might not give the whole picture. The SEC says this is all about making investors better informed when they vote on executive compensation. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Today in news of the Federal Reserve, nothing. Bupkis, nada. I mean, yeah, the Federal Open Market Committee wrapped up a two-day meeting, probably talked about interest rates. I don't know for sure. The upshot is that the Fed still thinks things are improving economy-wise, but they are going to base any interest rate increase on what the data says, which is exactly, by the way, what Chair Janet Yellen has been saying since she got that job. Speaking of that job, there was news of her predecessor today, one Ben Bernanke. We learned a couple of weeks ago he's taken a job as an advisor at the hedge fund Citadel. This morning, the bond investment house PIMCO said it has signed Mr. Bernanke to be an advisor to them as well. Patty Hirsch, our New York editor, is here to explain what that might mean. Hey, Patty.
Hi, Kai.
All right, bunch of things to roll through here with Ben's new job. Number one, conflict of interest. This man used to run the Federal Reserve. He has now gone through the revolving door, shall we say, working at a bond investment place and a hedge fund. Can he do that?
Yes, he can do that because the Federal Reserve regulates banks, and neither PIMCO nor Citadel are banks. Citadel is a hedge fund. PIMCO is a bond investment fund, so therefore, no conflict.
Handy, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty handy.
Pretty handy, right. Item number two, he's not technically working at, right? He's an advisor. He's of counsel, however they're characterizing it. Does that mean that he gets a call at 3 o'clock in the morning when Japanese bonds go crazy and they want to know what to do at PIMCO?
No, I don't think Ben's going to be calling him up or forcing him to go on the golf course for that matter. But he will be meeting with clients and he will be attending quarterly meetings at PIMCO to give advice. So he's sort of going to be there on the one hand to give advice to PIMCO's executives and talk about what's going on in the Fed or what might be going on. But also he's going to be going out and meeting clients and he's going to be able to say to them, from what I know about the Federal Reserve, from my experience there, and oh, by the way, I was in Washington, D.C., and I sat down with them for lunch the other day. He's going to be able to talk in that way, so they're going to feel as though he's in the flow.
So he will still be seen in the corridors of power in Washington, D.C.?
I expect so. I mean, really, that's going to be his currency, right? Because, you know, for him to be able to say, oh, I met with Janet the other week, or I met with some of the guys from the Dallas Fed the other week, I think you're going to see him around. He's going to be working himself so that he can plug his image that way.
Private sector, of course, means private money. He made like $200,000 a year running the Fed. He will be making more now.
Yeah, he's making like $200,000 a speech now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's not Clinton money, right? That's not $750,000
a speech.
Either
one of them. Yeah.
But he's getting there. And I think that what he's done is he's managed to lock himself into a situation where he's going to be basically making speeches at luncheons for Citadel and PIMCO. And he's kind of locked in his salary for a while.
Nobody wants a guy not to be able to make a living, right? I get that. And that's not what this is about. Is this, however, comma, just a little bit, oh, man.
Well, it's business as usual. I mean, yeah. You know, Alan Greenspan did it.
Yep,
you know,
yep, absolutely.
He actually became a consultant at PIMCO. I mean, yeah. He did the same thing. You know, Paul Volcker did it. He became the chairman of an investment bank. Right. So this is nothing new. And so long as it doesn't bleed into the regulatory issue, as long as it doesn't cause a conflict of interest, I don't really see there's that much wrong with it.
Patty Hirsch, he's our senior editor for our bureau in New York. Thanks, Patty.
Thanks, Kai.
We've been doing a quick series this week based on a book that we got here not too long ago. It's by Merritt Watts, and it's called First Jobs: True Tales of Bad Bosses, Quirky Coworkers, Big Breaks, and Small Paychecks. And we decided that instead of doing your standard interview, me just asking the author a bunch of questions, we wanted to hear from the people whose stories are in the book. So today, a guy who got his first job when he was 15 years old, and he stuck with the career for a long, long time.
This is Richard B. Stolle, otherwise known as Dick Stolle. My first job, at the age of 15, I was sports editor of my hometown newspaper, the Pekin, Illinois Daily Times. This was during World War II, and a lot of unusual things were taking place. A friend of mine, who was the sports editor of the Pekin Daily Times, enlisted in the Navy. He asked me if I would be interested in his submitting my name to the publisher of the paper. Of course, not knowing any better, I said I would be very interested. I was there working on the Pekin Times at the time of the invasion of Normandy. There was a sign, I remember, over the United Press teletype, which said, "Due to War Department regulations, only authorized persons can read the teletype." And the newspaper had been given an alert the day before. The alert from the War Department was simply, "Major news break coming tomorrow morning." I felt very privileged that a 15, 16-year-old could walk over to the teletype and find out things about World War II that almost nobody else in the world knew. Pretty heady stuff. I loved being in the newspaper office in mid-afternoon because our presses were down in the basement of this building. And about 2-3 o'clock, the paper would be on the press and somebody would push the button to start the presses. And suddenly you could feel the building shake and hear a roar coming up from down there. God, it was a real thrill every time that happened to me. I had this feeling, well, whatever I wrote's going out to 15,000 readers. Can't call it back now. And a sense that in a strange and minor way that I helped push that button that started the presses. It cemented my life. There was no way, after working as a professional a journalist at the age of 15, that I was ever going to want to do anything else.
Richard Stolle, one of the founding editors of People magazine, about his first job. More coming later this week. Final note on the way out today about which two things. Number one, the rich really are different. And number two, Coca-Cola had its annual shareholder meeting today. I mentioned both of those things literally just so I can play you the following piece of tape. It's of a Coke shareholder named Warren Buffett.
I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. I'd like to buy the world a Coke and keep it company.
Come on, how great was that, right? Buffett was piped in via video. He wasn't live. Buffett's own shareholder meeting, by the way, for his holding company Berkshire Hathaway is this weekend in Omaha, Nebraska. Get this, 50,000 people are expected to show up. Oracle of Omaha, indeed. He's really a very nice guy, by the way, Warren Buffett. We had him on the show a couple of years ago. We'll put that interview on our homepage in just a little bit. All right, we're done. The Dow off 0.4% today, 74 points. The Nasdaq gave back 0.6%, 31 points. The S&P 500 off 0.3%, 7 points there. Robbie Carman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Jake Gorski, Bill Lance, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Michael Raphael, and Charlton Thorpe engineered the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. APM, this is.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.